We often speculate about what would happen if an alien civilization visited us, but what if one already has? So today, our main topic is the idea that ancient alien civilizations might have visited us and influenced our civilization at some point in the past. This is a bit of a tricky topic because on the one hand, we have tons of really half-baked examples in this category of Fermi paradox solutions, while on the other, it's actually one of the logically stronger examples. The Fermi paradox, the seeming contradiction between the ancient immensity of the universe and how we seem to be its only inhabitants, has tons of proposed solutions. Here at SFIA, we generally break them down into four main categories. The first is that intelligent technological life just emerges far less often than we tend to assume, or doesn't last long. The second is that it's common enough, but we just aren't seeing it. And the third is that it is common and we do see it, but we just don't recognize it or believe the evidence. The fourth is our miscellaneous category for those that overlap two categories or don't fit in. Now we walk through all of these and their subcategories in the Fermi Paradox Compendium, and there are a lot. Even by just giving a passing look at them, that episode still clocks in at over 70 minutes, our longest episode, and the second longest is the original version of that episode. It would probably be beneficial to have seen at least one of those before watching this, though I will recap major points. Over the last couple years, we've tried to give most of our major solutions their own episode, and indeed Category 1, that civilizations are rare, has its own series here, The Great Filters, which in fact only covers part of that category. And to a degree, so does Category 2, that we are not seeing them, in the somewhat tongue-in-cheek Alien Civilization series. However, we tend to skip over Category 3 a lot, and that's mostly because it's awkward. The basic theories are actually entirely fine, and as a reminder, those subcategories are 3A, aliens are here but in secret, 3B, aliens visited our ancestors, our main focus for today, 3C, aliens are here but we can't tell, and 3D, we are actually aliens. There is a lot of overlap in these categories too, but 3A, that they are secretly among us, differs from 3C, that they are here but we can't tell, in that 3C isn't implying any attempt at hiding or deception, or even necessarily that they aren't from Earth, a sentient rock or tree or cloud we just don't even recognize as having a mind would be an example, or critters not from space but from some semi-overlapping parallel reality. 3A, on the other hand, is our UFOs and little green men category. Alternatively, 3B, ancient aliens, is not exclusive of 3D, that we are aliens, since we might be a leftover colony. That was a fairly popular theory back before we had a solid understanding of DNA and a complete enough fossil record to show that all life here almost certainly has common descent to something billions of years back. You can't be a descendant of the aliens of Tau Ceti because we can show that not only are you and I distantly related to our cats and dogs, but they can't be from Tau Ceti either, because we can track fossils back to show that common ancestor was here. Of course, it doesn't exclude an alien colony setting up shop here billions of years ago, but then they either must have left uncolonized, some stopped in just to plant a flag and sneezed, leaving only a couple of bacteria behind, or have been wiped out so spectacularly that only microorganisms survived. It also still leaves the door open to panspermia, the notion that the first life on Earth might have arisen not from tidal pools or oceanic thermal vents, but from some comet impacts where the comets house bacteria, or at least the chemical building blocks for bacteria. One of the things we would like to do when going to other places in our solar system is to look for evidence of life. If we find life in those places, and it is made of the same building blocks as life here, like using DNA, RNA, and amino acids to make proteins, then that will strongly support panspermia. Recently in 2016, the team behind the Rosetta Comet landing mission reported they had discovered the simplest of amino acids. Earth organisms use glycine. In the dust surrounding the comet 67P, we also found glycine. This was a confirmation of the first detection of glycine found during NASA's Stardust mission that flew by the comet WILD 2 in 2004. Now, before we get all excited about panspermia, we did not discover other amino acids we used, and, unlike other amino acids, glycine is the only one that has been shown to be able to form without liquid water. So this might be nothing more than a molecule that occurs in a mixture of organic molecules we find in and around comets, one amino acid an organism does not make. Even so, we do not have a very clear picture of how life initially arises from inanimate material, called abiogenesis, beyond that it should rather obviously require a decently rich soup of appropriate chemicals and an energy input. So all our theories on that are just looking for places where that occurs and trying to guess how common they were on the early planet and which might have been the more probable life-bearing soup. The only two problems with the notion that we might be transplants from another planet are that first, it just moves the origin issue back to an even more distant time and location, and second, you need a transport mechanism. Whether that's intelligent or natural, it leaves a big question mark as to why the galaxy isn't teeming with life, which of course is the whole problem with the Fermi paradox in the first place. It's not a very good Fermi paradox solution if it just leaves you with the same problem. The Fermi paradox is presumably not a real paradox. Folks leave comments about that sometimes, so I feel obliged to state the obvious. We assume there's an entirely logical solution that would make it non-paradoxical. Most solutions proposed do not do a great job at that, and many just pass the buck, but some actually exacerbate it. We try to look at the problem from the perspective of known science and technologies that are reasonably plausible under that science. Folks will often suggest some science or tech that would seem to solve the problem. After all, we are very new to science and new theories are abundant, but most actually make it worse. Faster than light travel, time travel, travel to parallel universes, technologies that can create or convert energy even better than fusion or antimatter, or thermodynamic bending technology like a perpetual motion machine, all make exploring, traveling, and colonizing the galaxy easier, which does not help with the Fermi paradox. If you assume civilizations have warp speed travel, then the option that they haven't colonized the galaxy relies entirely on a matter of preference, and extinction becomes ludicrous. They will have had some remnant or distant isolationist colony survive anything that brought them down, and on astronomical timelines, even a handful of folks can breed back up a galactic civilization. This is a big problem for everything in our Category 2 and 3, and most of the miscellaneous ones in 4 as well, but it's especially lethal for 3D, the idea that we are descendants of aliens. 3C, that we can't recognize them as intelligent, smart clouds or rocks or trees, suffers from the other problems we discussed in the compendium, mostly one big problem for the theory and one big problem in discussing it. The problem with the theory is that, in a nutshell, intelligence can recognize other intelligence. Assuming your intelligence evolved, it did so because it served a practical purpose in aiding your survival, which for higher intelligence means having tools and altering your environment. You don't really need a high abstraction thought process for quick dodging of predators. Indeed, it actually tends to hinder that, as we discussed before. Conscious thought can slow you down. The kind of intelligence that would tend to lead to civilizations and technology are the kind that form a group to spot wars to defend against them, or hunt them instead. Those tools and alterations are noticeable and easily recognized as artificial on the whole. The other problem, in us discussing it, is that you can't really prove or disprove it. I don't know how to disprove that a rock is intelligent, or that there's a parallel Earth, like some fey realms of fairies and leprechauns, that we can't detect. Same as the simulation argument, or the notion that reality might be a dream, you can't prove or disprove it, so discussing it tends to be fairly futile. Falsifiability is important in theories, not just for good science, but because generally, that which can't be falsified or proven typically has no obvious bearing on our existence anyway. That leaves us 3A, aliens among us now, and 3B, aliens among us way back. Needless to say, both could be true. They aren't exclusive. And for that matter, while I don't give it a category, these subcategories exist under the assumption that there aren't aliens hanging around openly and publicly on Earth anyway. That's sort of the point of the paradox in the first place. But we can't actually rule out that you and I might simply be insane, that your neighbor has green skin, has a UFO in their driveway, is not from Jupiter, Florida, but the actual planet, makes no secret of this, and you just filter it out. Considering lots of people seem to do this with other things, that we tend to accuse folks who follow Category 3A of being unhinged is probably rather unfair. Many of the other solutions require either us or the aliens to have some behaviors that might be viewed by many as rather stupid or crazy too. So this option shouldn't be dismissed too casually, though of course the actual point is that any theory which seems about as likely as personal self-deception or insanity probably should be given no more weight than that option either. This is the reason we mostly skip 3A here. I don't think people are nuts for believing in UFOs, I just think they're wrong. There are some crazy people who believe in them, and there are some liars who claim they've seen them. But there are also crazy people who believe the city of London exists, and some liars who claim to have been there. Neither indicates that London does not exist and does not get visited, nor is it particularly likely it doesn't exist, and I've somehow fooled myself into believing it does. Quantity has a quality all of its own. For some things, for science and for eyewitnesses, it's less so. The problem is that people already know this, but if you've had a flying saucer land in your front yard, or at least your memory indicates that's what it was, even if that wasn't true, let's be honest, you are probably not going to believe evidence to the contrary. That doesn't make you crazy or stupid, and since so many people say such things, we tend to assume they can't all be wrong or liars, and many folks find this reasoning compelling. Many others do not, I do not, and I won't pretend otherwise, but I won't ridicule folks for that belief. It's a pointless waste of time and mean-spirited, and I at least have more than enough bad karma to walk off that I'd prefer to spend my time doing that rather than incurring more. So that's basically 3A. It differs from the others in that there is actually a ton of evidence supporting it, it just happens to be very questionable. And unlike the others, it's a theory whose evidence comes from the one place in the universe we can easily examine, Earth, in the here and now. All the others at least benefit from being hard to examine. Even 3B, Ancient Aliens, at least benefits from being in the past, and we are always digging up new bits of the past we didn't know about, sometimes whole civilizations. And of course 3B is our main focus for today, which we should probably finally get to. Welcome to SFIA, by the way, where we always have a point but sometimes need an hour to get there, hence why everyone is always encouraged to grab a drink and a snack before hitting play. 3B, Ancient Aliens, is actually not a bad theory in and of itself, which is funny as it's probably the most ridiculed. While it's humorous and humble to suggest nobody visits Earth because we are boring or that advanced aliens give us no more regard than we give ants, that's all those are, humorous and humble. Ignoring that we have whole academic disciplines devoted to studying ants or small groups of people in the wilderness, the key thing about being hyper-intelligent is that you can multitask and learn a lot. For those of you who remember the Matryoshka brain we've discussed before, a computer powered by an entire star, that thing has enough processing power to not only emulate the minds of every human on Earth, but enough to do every single person in the entire observable universe. It could do so even if every single planet in it, all the billions in this galaxy and billions of other galaxies, each had billions of people on them. And that concept doesn't even assume any freaky new science. You might wonder what it would gain from talking to us, but it's quite capable of holding a simultaneous discussion with every person alive without even noticing the processing power used for that. On top of that, intelligence doesn't scale well. Humans don't find ants interesting because we are relatively stupid, we find them interesting because we are quite smart and curious. Nobody goes around saying they don't study parrots or cats or oak trees because they're too smart to bother with such idiots. There's no way to guess what an advanced civilization would find interesting, but you'd expect them to be more curious and inquisitive than us, not the reverse. We have spoken about post-scarcity societies on this channel before, and one of the things that folks in post-scarcity societies would be interested in is occupying their time with something meaningful. We already find it interesting to study microbes, plants, and critters on our little planet. A civilization that has used all of the power outputted by their star, a Kardashev 2 civilization, would presumably have members interested in doing this too. Even if the average alien in a K2 civilization was not particularly curious or inquisitive, even if 1% of 1% of their population was an exception and was curious and inquisitive about other aliens, that would still add up to billions of aliens scouring the galaxy tracking down inferior life. So the notion that someone visited Earth before is not even a little bizarre. Quite to the contrary, it's trying to explain away why such civilizations may exist and haven't visited here. That's problematic, and one of the big flaws with most Category 2 solutions of the Fermi paradox. We have to hand-wave in stuff like the zoo hypothesis, or Star Trek Prime Directive of non-interference with primitive life, to explain a lack of visits. In that regard, 3B, Ancient Alien Visitors, is difficult only because in the first place, you have to wonder why they stopped visiting, and in the second, you have to wonder where all the evidence of those visits disappeared to. That's its only big flaw. And I should also add that like most of our subcategories, it actually contains a ton of different solutions, not all of which are aliens helped us build the pyramids type. For instance, a fairly common and reasonable one is that Category 1 is more or less correct, that intelligent life is pretty rare, and that the relative handful of civilizations that naturally emerged tend not to be very expansionist, but are curious. So they explore around, and when they find some species that looks like they might be on the right path, they give them a nudge, biologically or just some advice, something we call uplifting. Then they leave because they value intelligence, but also diversity. So they'll give folks a hand with one of the last hurdles, but then they go wait by the finish line. They get to learn about us before they tinkered with us, and they can get the notes from our own history when we get on the galactic stage, which gives a good reason why they might show up in mythology a bit, but all gone before you have regular, solid record keeping. Once we get to the finish line, they say hi, give us a hand getting started, and encourage us to do unto others as they did unto us. We see something along these lines as the galactic culture in David Brin's Uplift Saga. They feel folks should mostly get there on their own, skinned knees and all, but they're not dogmatic about it and wouldn't let an asteroid wipe out a whole planet while standing on a soapbox about non-interference, or worry that some tribe in antiquity they visited thought they were gods, since they were just as likely to make some up anyway, and after a few generations, they'd be indistinguishable from invented myths. This runs headlong into the non-exclusivity problems and Dyson dilemma we've discussed before in this series, but so does pretty much every other solution to the Fermi paradox outside of Category 1, and not as bad as some, honestly. None of the Fermi paradox solutions presented thus far are really good, and I tend to subscribe to Category 1 not as the best solution, but as the one with the least number of holes in it. If any of them were truly clear and convincing, we'd have dropped the paradox phrasing. Another of the big problems with Category 2 and 3 in general is that they are very motivation-based, something absent from Category 1. This is obviously a big issue with non-exclusivity, since the whole point of that is that solutions that rely on universal behavior by every species, and sometimes even every member of those species, tends to be rather dubious. There's no particular reason to think that you have to be capitalist or communist, democratic or totalitarian, religious or atheist to colonize space. So solutions that only work if all aliens had one of those ideologies are pretty dubious. But motivation also matters for ancient visitors too, because aliens showing up here in 3000 BC to get the pyramids rolling as a prelude to a failed conquest is very different from ones who taught monolith building to encourage astronomy down the road. Evidence and logic for each of those will play out differently, and they are exclusive and contradictory. Yes, you can have multiple reasons for encouraging folks to build something, and it can have multiple purposes, but they have to fit together, and a thin bit of circumstantial evidence that Stonehenge was meant to be an observatory is not enhanced by an equally thin argument the pyramids were meant to be landing pads for spacecraft. A blurry image of the Loch Ness Monster is not enhanced by a blurry photo of Bigfoot or a leprechaun or a UFO. These are not related, but folks will tend to lump them together. Both ways, too. Proving a photo of a leprechaun is fake has no bearing on if the Bigfoot photo is real. Indeed, it has no bearing on if other leprechaun photos are real, too. But at least disproving one removes one piece of relevant evidence to leprechauns. People do that too. We tend to get a lot of inertia to theories as well. They collect bits of evidence, good or bad, but for those fond of the theory, the bad evidence might have helped sway them originally, but it being tossed out later doesn't remove their confidence much. We've known for a long time that the pyramids, or various megaliths, were quite buildable by technology available to their builders, And folks often would say how they did it was a mystery, because a given entirely scholastic article would say so, but not because that scholar thought their existence was mysterious, but because they weren't sure which of a dozen plausible methods was the one used. So rather than pointing out that there were a ton of ways they could have done it, and we just weren't sure which of those they used, or maybe something else, that mystery gets kicked around as a total one, that we have no clue how they did it at all, rather than which method. That Stonehenge Observatory option I mentioned a moment ago has been kicking around for centuries, and mostly derives from us not knowing why they built something that was obviously very hard to build. In the 18th century, it got noted that the entrance faces the rising sun on summer solstice, and astronomy has been important to many cultures for both ceremonial and practical reasons. But they obviously didn't build it to help locate where the sun rises for summer solstice. Two heavy rocks with sharp points lined up in that direction would do that job better and way easier. It may have had a ceremonial role related to the movement of the heavens, but it wasn't for keeping track of them. It would be massive overkill and not very efficient either. Nonetheless, some ceremonial role involving astronomy is quite probable, and we still don't know. The difficult thing about a monument that was in regular use for centuries during which there was no writing is that folks using it might not have known the original purpose either. Some architect might have said it needs an opening and thought it was nicely symbolic to put it lined up that way, even if the intended purpose was unrelated. Later generations might have taken to holding meetings and ceremonies on summer solstice at dawn just because someone noticed that feature and assumed it was the right and proper way to do things. Then someone else could have come along and assumed it was right and proper because it was a temple to the sun god. And if he left a carving of that sun god on stone, painted green to symbolize the sun-nurtured plants, its discovery would set off a wave of folks convinced it was an alien landing site. Additionally, folks often don't hear about the disproven stuff. It's not as exciting or just ignored as inconvenient. The pyramids have hosted endless theories of this sort, like the Orion correlation theory, that the pyramids of Giza were aligned like Orion's belt, one of whose stars was symbolic of Osiris, and the belt points towards Sirius, the brightest star in the sky, or stars, it's actually a binary, and which symbolized his wife and sister Isis in Egyptian mythology. And if viewed from the south, small shafts in the pyramids line up to view Orion and Sirius, which would be perfectly fine. Again, our ancestors took astronomy and monument building quite seriously, and often did mesh them together. Except that those shafts do not line up with those stars. The stars move, as the Earth has a 26,000-year precession, and for that alignment to fit, they'd have had to build that place in 10,000 BC, as opposed to 2500 BC, which is a major reason for folks often arguing them to be much older. Honestly, the theory was pretty nuts even in 1983 when it got proposed, though fit comfortably in with a lot of other zanier pyramid theories, but we still had a fairly limited pool of dating methods then, and they were often off by whole centuries, indeed often still are. But we have way more methods and gotten way more accurate with them, and this idea that the pyramids are even more ancient than established goes from highly dubious to the downright nonsensical at this point. But it's a recurring problem. Theories can start off fairly plausible from what we know, and gain strength from age for many folks, even though they've actually been getting cut to ribbons in the meantime. I should probably note also that people being people, an awful lot of our monuments are protected against much intrusive study because the local government would prefer not to lose the tourist revenue, some of which might dry up if the air of mystery was dispelled. It's cooler to think maybe the Sphinx is a statue of an alien built 9,000 years ago than that King Khafre had a monstrous ego, and the entire Sphinx erosion hypothesis that suggests an older age, dubious though it was to begin with, as one probably should not trust erosion dating on artifacts people tend to hang around and visit a lot, bypasses that none of the other junk lying around there dates back further by any other means. And one handy thing about construction projects, presumably alien ones too, is that folks do tend to leave a lot of garbage all over the place when building them, including graffiti. Work crews building the Great Pyramid of Khufu more than 4,000 years ago are believed to be behind graffiti markings in a hidden and sealed chamber discovered by a robot called Jedi back in 2011. When I say old junk, I'm not demeaning ancient artifacts, just being literal. An awful lot of archaeology is examining garbage because we tend to cut off useful and working stuff, whereas we usually buried or kicked dirt over discarded broken pots or tools that couldn't be repaired. You have to be careful, of course. Garbage found at a site could predate it, or come from someone visiting centuries later, and a lot of dating processes can be thrown off by various things. So it's a matter of applying many different methods to many different objects and averaging things out. This is also true for astronomy too, and why distances to stars or their ages are often given with big uncertainty margins. Finding ways to narrow such things down is just part of science and scholastics in general, and so is tossing out theories as evidence contradicts them and moving to a new camp, rather than erecting a permanent home on the side of a pet theory because it sounds cool. I want to emphasize that because one of the reasons a lot of ancient alien theories persist is they often did emerge as entirely logical and plausible theories when first introduced and when we knew less. They often gained a lot of publicity because they sounded cool, and when scholars packed up and moved to a new camp of thought, the idea stuck around and gained lots of allegedly corroborating evidence. And it's fun too. Some of my favorite stories are ancient alien ones. I love the Stargate sci-fi franchise, which bases entirely off the idea that the pyramids were ancient alien landing pads. I also enjoy stories of the Trojan War and the Iliad and Odyssey, but I don't believe it actually happened that way, nor does the discovery of Troy change that opinion. I'm also not blind to the notion that we are indeed very good at manipulating evidence to paint the picture we want, and that can cut both ways. We could be tricking ourselves into assuming mundane explanations when they are genuinely fantastic. But more importantly, I'd emphasize that this doesn't actually hurt the ancient alien theory for the Fermi paradox. Them not building the pyramids doesn't disprove the idea any more than them not building Big Ben in London. It wouldn't even disprove they were hanging around there and gave Imhotep some geometry lessons. Nor does it have relevancy to all the other ancient alien theories which pop up in almost every culture. It just doesn't offer any proof they were or did. Again, if they were anthropologically inclined and wanted to avoid disrupting us in the long term, they might have intentionally relied on our tendency to let stories grow and twist with each retelling, and to converge to certain popular themes, to effectively erase their existence from our memory. I've also mentioned before that I don't like the theory because I feel it steals away some of our accomplishments and distorts our view of our ancestors, painting a false and diminished picture. Suggesting Newton or Da Vinci got help from aliens or were aliens diminishes them and their achievements. The Iliad is a great tale, but for my part, I'd like a more accurate view of what happened to the city. Not to replace Homer's tale. It's still good, even if fictional, same as Lord of the Rings. Fundamentally, though, that's not an argument against the theory, just a personal objection. Again, the key weaknesses are about where those visitors went, and any specific theory needs to answer why they were visiting rather than staying, what they wanted to accomplish, and so on. It also has the evidence problem, and again, all the Fermi paradox solutions have that, but while the past here on Earth is hard to prove compared to the present, it is a lot easier than trying to poke around Mars or Alpha Centauri for ruins. In that regard, it's got a higher burden of proof to meet, since there should be evidence lying around. We don't see any artifacts on Earth that don't decently match up to those nearby, or seem excessive for their time and location. We certainly don't see any advanced materials or devices lying around. No atomic power sources or metamaterials or impressive alloys or crystals or semiconductors. Those should be present. Their absence doesn't disprove the idea, but here, on Earth, where we can find evidence, it weakens the theory compared to other Fermi paradox solutions, where we can say, well, there could be mountains of evidence, just not on this planet. And at the same time, it does still suffer from those same problems most of Category 2 options have. If aliens visited us, why do they stop? If we present a reason, like a desire for non-interference, can we realistically assume this would hold solid for not just them and every member of their species, but every other species out there too? It's easy enough to imagine aliens who might pop by to satisfy their curiosity about us, and maybe give us a hand on a few things, but want to leave before causing too much long-term disruption. But harder to assume everyone feels obliged to follow that policy. And again, no matter how good a theory is, from a logical standpoint, it has to have evidence. The logic is fairly okay, but not great, for this theory, but the evidence is lacking. So ultimately, while Ancient Aliens is a pretty fun theory and makes for great stories, it's just not a good Fermi paradox solution. It's a decently logical theory with some circumstantial and dubious evidence that mostly just paints a coating over other proposed solutions, since it still has most of the other flaws and features of various Category 2 solutions, but adds on the need to explain an absence of evidence for it from the one place in the universe we can most easily find that evidence. Next week, we will be looking at mind uploading and some of the challenges and applications of that technology. We will also take a look at Denysie Taylor's new novel, The Singularity Trap, our June Book of the Month. The week after that, we will return to the Outward Bound series to take a look at colonizing Mercury. For alerts when those and other episodes come out, make sure to subscribe to the channel. And if you enjoyed this episode, you can share it with others or join the conversation down below in the comments section or at our Facebook and Reddit groups, Science and Futurism with Isaac Arthur. And if you'd like to support future content, you can donate to SFIA at Patreon or our website, isaacarthur.net, or buy some of the fun SFIA merchandise at Signal, and those are all linked below in the video description. Until next time, this is Isaac Arthur saying thanks for watching and have a great week.